ladies and gentlemen. Today is the first weekday of the KSFR Fall Fun Drive, and we are here to ask you whether you think KSFR is a resource worth supporting. If you think it is, then this is the time of year where you get to call. We do this twice a year, where you get to actually call 428-1393, 428-1393, and make a contribution to this wonderful station and this wonderful resource. I have with me today Catherine Ugaretz. She is an educator. She works with all kinds of students, and we had her on last time when she was talking about a program at the Santa Fe Institute for educating girls who are entering the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we are going to, in a few minutes, hear an interview that I recorded just a couple of days ago with Farai Chidea, who has written a book called Innovating Women, and it's about women in high tech, and we're actually offering a copy. This is such a high tech day that we are offering a copy of her book in the form of an e-book. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you can download an e-book in an e-reader, whatever those things are that people use that are more high-tech than I am, give a call, 428-1393, or give a call anyway, and think about women and girls, think about science and technology, and think about public radio and what it means to you.
Yes. Well, I just love that you invited me. Thank you, Mary Charlotte. And you asked me a little earlier why I listen to public radio. And when I think about public radio, I actually go back to being a high school student in a small Midwestern town and first hearing it in the car of one of my teachers. It was back in the days when your high school teacher could drive you somewhere if you needed to go somewhere.
Right.
And he was a high school history teacher. And it occurred to me at that moment, I grew up working class, that here was a way that I could learn, and that I could learn for free, and it was like this whole other world of conversation that was out there.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and it's wonderful, and I think it's still one of the reasons I love listening to public radio, and in particular your show, because I'm able to eavesdrop on intelligent conversation. I don't have to dress up. I can be driving down Cerritos Road after dropping my son off to school, and I can be surprised by the different topics and continue to learn. It's important to me.
We don't have to dress up to go on the air either. That's one of the nice things about radio. Don't have to do your hair.
Exactly. It's a delight for busy people.
428-1393 is the number. And basically what we're asking you today is what this program and what this station mean to you, whether you're willing to live without them, and if not, how are you going to support them? So here's a very simple way. Call 428-1393. And whether or not you want a copy of the ebook, that's great if you do. Go for it. But in any case, make a donation of any size at all. We've had people make donations of $10. We've had people make donations of $1,000. Orders of magnitude different. The impulse is the same. The heart is the same.
Absolutely. My donations in general these days are pretty modest. But I love that feeling of, I mean, I see it as being a philanthropist. Because if it's in proportion to what's appropriate to you, it shows where your values are, it shows where your commitment and appreciation lives, and that's important. I think we all feel that nice ping of happiness after we're able to contribute whatever the amount.
It's so true. 428-1393. We're going to go to this interview in a second, but I want to let people know that our goal for this hour is $1,000. The phones have started ringing. We're very happy about that. Let's get all the phones ringing. Let's get all the phone volunteers busy off their little butts and make a contribution. The goal is $1,000. Once again, 428-1393, and let's go to our interview. I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Farai Chidea. She's a journalist. She's host of the podcast One with Farai, and she is co-author with Vivek Wadhwa of the book Innovating Women, the Changing Face of Technology. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
So this book is an anthology of writings by women in the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. and in entrepreneurial careers. How did this book come to be?
Well, I had met Vivek Wadhwa, a longtime Silicon Valley participant and agitator, at a conference. So when I say agitator, I mean that he's talked about racial issues in Silicon Valley for a long time, and he wanted to also talk about gender. And he needed a co-author, and I thought, what an amazing opportunity, and it has been.
So Silicon Valley and computer science and the STEM departments in a lot of universities are not only pretty much male-dominated, but also often really, really biased against women. What is going on? I mean, these are supposed to be meritocracies.
Well, you know, there's so much evidence, and we put much of it in the book, but there's even more research, you know, coming out day by day, that Silicon Valley is not a meritocracy for women or for most people of color. There are some exceptions, recently, the CEO of Microsoft basically said that women shouldn't ask for raises, they should just go on a good karma system. And the amount of laughter, derisive laughter, that accompanied that remark was really extraordinary. And so, and later, you know, there was backpedaling, like, oh, I didn't mean don't ask for a raise. But there's this idea that women are supposed to somehow be saintly creatures who don't ask for anything, but yet the culture of Silicon Valley and the culture of technology is hard charging, iterate, iterate, iterate. And so gender stereotypes, women who are hard charging are called pushy and bossy and all sorts of other nasty things. And the women who may just be interested in STEM fields and want to quietly do their work are viewed as not being aggressive enough. So there's this real squeeze play that's affecting women in the Valley and elsewhere globally.
So that's basically there's no room for you at all. If you either you're supposed to be aggressive, in which case you're called pushy, or you're not supposed to be aggressive, in which case you're called insufficiently aggressive.
Exactly.
So when women are young, when they're in their schooling, either elementary, high school, college, there's a lot of ways, subtle and overt, that they're steered away from STEM studies and STEM careers. What does that look like?
Well, one of the most fascinating stories was that I interviewed the CTO, Chief Technology Officer of Xerox, Sophie Vandenbroek, and she was widowed at a young age when she already had children. You know, her husband died of a heart attack while they were on a camping trip. And so her teen daughter, and this was a couple years ago, was getting her next year's class schedule. And as one might expect, I mean, it's not 100% correlation, but, you know, the daughter of a chief technology officer is going to be doing pretty well in math and science. But she was tracked into lower math and science classes than boys who weren't performing as well. And when Ms. Vandenbroek talked to her daughter, she found out that her friends, these other teenage girls who were doing well in math and science, were also being tracked into lower classes. So she went to the school and had a very pointed meeting. And so it's just one of these things where if you, and also another woman we spoke with, who is the head of Black Girls Code, had an experience where she sent her daughter to a fancy computer coding summer camp when she was 11. And her daughter came back and said, you know, Mommy, I really loved the classes, but the boys got more attention than the girls. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the potential of girls being under-recognized. And, you know, when a teenage girl can win the Nobel Prize, as we just saw with Malala Yousafzai, we can see that girls have infinite potential. And yet, in science and technology, and then broadly, that's not always the case when people look at teen girls or young women or older women.
And we're not talking about, like, 1965. We're talking about now. I mean, girls are still being differently treated and differently tracked today.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, the examples, the two examples I just gave you of Sophie Vandenbroek and of Kimberly Bryant of Black Girl Code, these both happened within the past 5 years. And what Kimberly Bryant of Black Girls Code says is, and this is very much true based on statistical research, is that computer science programs actually graduated more people when she was in college, which was 20 plus years ago, than they are now, but a lower percentage of women as a total.
The examples you gave are daughters of
women who are very strong in their fields, one can only imagine that it's a lot worse and a lot harder for daughters of, you know, very talented daughters, let's say, of single mothers who are just getting by, who aren't in STEM fields and things like that, because they don't even have an advocate.
Yes, well, you know, there are advocates who are being developed. So, for example, Black Girls Code works in urban areas, whether or not they're low income, they're ones where often the parents don't have any particular technology experience, or they find themselves flummoxed when their kids are trying to do robotics. Like, my gosh, you know, my kid's trying to do robotics. How am I supposed to help? And so it becomes this wonderful virtuous circle where these programs, and there are many of them that are now reaching out to girls in STEM, are not only helping the girls, but also helping women understand the power of technology and that it's not a scary thing, and that, frankly, this is very critical to our time. Technology is everywhere. You and I right now are using technology to record this audio. The fluency with technology is steeped in people who are doing blue-collar jobs as well as white-collar jobs. So technology is not just for Zuckerberg. It's really for everybody.
Yeah, very much so. And one of the things that I was thinking about, I mean, the title Innovating Women, innovation is so much about coming up with new ideas to address problems. But the thing is, who gets to define what the problems are that we're putting our energy into solving? And I wondered if you saw women asking different questions or addressing different problems than have been traditionally out there in the, you know, in the entrepreneurial world.
Yeah, we saw that there was a trend that a lot of men were looking to create the killer app, and a lot of women were seeking to solve existing social problems. You know, like, we have a problem with healthcare delivery, and therefore I'm going to work on something that relates to this tangible problem. And there's nothing wrong with working on the killer app. You know, Twitter, for example, it was just an idea. It wasn't like, oh, the world needs Twitter. People invented it and then found uses for it. But I think that, you know, there is some evidence that women both are creating technology. So one of the people who worked on Waze, with W-A-Z-E, which is a traffic monitoring firm that was later acquired, is a woman. And so that's very practical. How do you get from point A to point B without getting stuck in a traffic jam? And then you also see people starting nonprofits like Black Girls Code, and you see people starting companies that use technology as a platform to deliver non-technological services. So Care.com, which places caregivers in homes, is a technological platform so that if you are doing elder care, illness care, et cetera, you can use this platform to find a caregiver. So these are a lot of the things, and the founder of Care.com is a woman. So these are all things that we see.
We're talking to Farai Chidea about her book, Innovating Women. And the phones are ringing, but it's a little bit slow, so let's give the number again, 428-1393. That's in the 505 area code, 428-1393. One person called and said, what do I need to get this ebook? And I guess what you need is either an iPad or a Kindle or some kind of ebook reader. So if you are doing that kind of thing and you want a copy of this ebook, call 428-1393. This book is published by Farai Chidea, whom we've just been listening to. It's published by a specifically ebook publisher. So it's interesting the direction that publishing, at least in some sectors, is going. So 428-1393. And I love what she's talking about.
Yes. Well, I think one of the moments that I thought was really interesting is her pointing out how important it is to be a part of defining the problems.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I'm not saying it's not important to design, say, a better dating app or something like that, but I think that we have bigger problems, and having a diverse group of people discussing what those problems are, defining the problems, creating solutions, and making something that makes a difference is really essential. And one of the ways that I saw girls begin to reevaluate their relationship to technology is through a conversation of making. because a lot of women who go into technology and a lot of women who could go into technology are people who like to make things. And they bring that kind of, yeah, they bring that kind of thinking. And maybe the things that you are making now might be more artistically minded because those are the materials that you've been around. But what happens if young women have different materials, if they have access to the robotics, if they have access to learning how to code, and then what is it that they want to make? And I've seen some incredible work from young women.
Very interesting. Yeah, that sort of creative impulse. And sometimes we don't think that science and technology are the same kind of creativity as artistic creativity, but it's really kind of two sides of the coin. I mean, that kind of, whether it's robotics or whether it's oil painting, it's like this innovative creativity.
Yeah, it's making something. And yeah. I think the other piece that is important is problem solving. And I think that that's one piece that we often forget. People sometimes from difficult circumstances, they may struggle in school, they may do well in school, but often they are excellent problem solvers because perhaps they have had to figure out how to make things work with fewer resources. Maybe they've had to become more creative, even if it's just about how to get transportation from here to there. And we don't want to discount those skills because they are incredibly important to making, designing, creating,
and to dealing with
through.
A world that has a lot of problems to be solved.
Absolutely. Being a problem solver is a key skill.
428-1393 is the number here at KSFR. Well, actually, I'm in the Santa Fe Baking Company, but over at KSFR is the number that you can call. And it's really about the kind of diversity that we talk about. I mean, diversity is a buzzword, and people say, oh, we want to respect diversity, we want to celebrate diversity. Well, here on KSFR, we have a truly eclectic format. We've got something for everybody. We've got all kinds of news and music, and on this show, there's something, I think, for everybody, too. We do arts and sciences and politics and environment and all kinds of things, because we want to serve the public. You, dear ladies and gentlemen, gentle listeners, are the public, and this is the time where we ask you to give a call, 428-1393, and just simply support this show.
Absolutely. I imagine it as the passing the hat around and
exactly.
Seeing it in front of you and just doing what you can, and if you're driving, pulling over to make the call. And can you donate online as well?
Absolutely, ksfr.org. But if you give a call, then you can get fabulous prizes.
Oh, prizes. Yes, well.
You know, so it's, I mean, either way. Some people don't like to make phone calls, and they can do it easily on the air. Or they're at work, and it's hard to make a phone call, but you can make a quick donation at work. Whatever works for you, ladies and gentlemen, 428-1393. We're going to go back to Farai Chidea, but we want to remind people that there is a $1,000 goal for this hour, and it would be just great if you would help us meet it, especially if you've never given to public radio before. This is such a great time to start. Just give a call, 428-1393. So you've got, on the one hand, women who make it into these fields and are doing things like care.com and who have what we might call a natural compassion or interest in social issues and things like that. And then you have this kind of like warrior cutthroat aspect that exists in business culture, especially at the highest levels where there's the most money and power involved. Are women changing that culture in any significant way?
Well, there's an amazing set of women who are creating, like Loretta McCarthy, who is a financier who helped create Golden Seeds, which takes groups of men and women with wealth and applies that wealth to female-led startups. There's Kay Koplowitz, also runs a different organization that does the same thing, and she's someone who made her money as a technological innovator in the world of early cable TV. So you know, there are women, what we're seeing is this real amazing sense that women can create opportunities for other women, particularly the women who have become financially successful already. Many of them have devoted their time to creating organizations that reward companies for having female founders or co-founders. And the reason that that's important is because there's evidence that companies with female co-founders actually have a greater chance of long-term success than ones with only male co-founders, and also that companies that have a gender-integrated board with women as a part of it have 35% higher returns than companies that only have a male board. So these are hard facts, and when you think about business and fiduciary responsibility, it is the fiduciary responsibility of companies to deliver value to their shareholders. And so if you look at it not as a, oh, the ladies, let's help the ladies, but let's help ourselves. I mean, I love the idea of helping women for women's sake, but that's not going to fly in terms of convincing a large group of the world of business that this is what they need to do. What's going to fly is what we are doing, Vivek and I are doing in this book, and what so many people like Kay Koplowitz and Loretta McCarthy are doing, which is making the business case for gender inclusion and gender integration. We have to make that case, and the numbers are there.
I think it's really interesting that we have a culture in which men, and let's call it what it is, which is essentially white men, act against their own interest. Their cultural interest in keeping a kind of boys' club is stronger than their financial interest in having stronger companies, because as you just said, a company gets stronger when it's integrated.
Well, you know, there's many different ways of thinking of interest. I mean, there's clearly ways in which these companies are working against a larger shareholder interest, but also people feel there's a self-interest that is also about feeling comfortable and feeling in control. And not surprisingly, a lot of people who start companies are control freaks, and that's not about the technology industry, it's just in general. And so when you think about control, you also think about who's with me. And if you have someone who is not necessarily, Rosabeth Moss Kantor of Harvard Business School talks about social replication, which is like people hiring people they feel comfortable around or people who are, quote, like them. That could be race, it could be class, it could be interest. And so there's this other form of self-interest, which is I just want to feel comfortable. I don't want anyone to call me out if there's a gender issue. I just want to do my thing, and I don't want anybody to give me any back talk, you know. So that's a different kind of self-interest, which may undercut the financial self-interest. And I think making people realize that their unwillingness to be challenged and their unwillingness to be gently pushed into the future is actually hurting their bottom line, that may help change things.
Very interesting. Now, there's a lot of sexual harassment in the workplace, including in the STEM fields, even when these women who are being harassed are highly trained professionals and equals of the people who are harassed, of the men who are harassing them. And then women have to make choices about what to do, to stay quiet, to fight, to leave. You talk about, some of the women who write in this book talk about some of those choices. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we found a lot of women just left. And you know, incidentally, I'm working on a different book right now on more broadly on the future of jobs in America. And my original survey research for that book seems to indicate that the majority of people who experience discrimination, and I didn't limit it to gender, don't report it. And those who report it also mainly don't get a satisfactory outcome. And there are many reasons for that. I mean, there are differences of opinion about what constitutes harassment. There's some incidents of very, very clear harassment, but there's also ones that are more ambiguous. But what we found particularly in this book, one woman talks about, this is not sexual harassment, but it's certainly sexual discrimination, talks about being told that she was working, quote, mommy hours, because she wanted to work a slightly different schedule as a computer coder than other people. And a lot of the gender issues we saw, right now we're seeing some horrible things coming out in terms of harassment of women in the video gaming industry that really are more sexual harassment directly, but the whole mommy syndrome the idea that women who choose to have families cannot also work is something that we heard over and over again in Innovating Women.
It's interesting. I read a book once by a sociologist who was talking about the workplace in different countries, and it's not just that women are demanding better lives, but I mean more rational lives, that like work-life balance. But for example, in Europe, I mean, nobody's expected, very few people are expected to work 80 hours a week as a matter of course. And there was a great story about an American manager who was running a company in Holland and asked his employees to come in on the weekend to get some order out. And they just said, no, are you kidding? Are you insane? And they got the order out on Monday. And so there's this sort of like crazy workaholism is not only gender discriminatory, it isn't even necessary.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that brings up some very deep cultural issues with the United States. You know, the United States, we are now officially the world's biggest workaholics. Of every developed country, we are the ones who spend the most time working per week and also literally leave 5+ million days of accrued vacation leave on the table every year. Don't take leave that's expiring. That says a lot, I think, about a level of both compulsion and fear within American society about what constitutes productive work. And yet there's many different studies that show that overwork does not produce productivity. There's a certain point at which your brain hits a wall. And, you know, for me, for example, I'm working on another book. Last night I was staying awake trying to push myself, and I got so much less productive over time. I mean, I'm not saying that sometimes you don't have to just push through it, but on a macro level, companies also have to realize that there are kind of two separate issues. One is that overwork is generally valued in American society, but it is not shown to have productivity gains. The second part is that some occupations do actually favor people who have non-traditional sleep and creativity cycles, and computer coding is one of them. So there are famous stories about Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, you know, coding for 30 hours at a time. That is something, there is a kind of, you know, and some writers do this as well, but there are times where certain people tunnel, but also then consequently they usually crash. So you can't expect the same person who's been coding for 30 hours to then come in at, you know, 9 a.m. the next morning after, you know, a coding marathon. So if you're going to have people who are pushing themselves to these extremes, you also have to have flexibility in the workforce. And that's a real negotiation that employees and employers have to work out.
We're talking to Farai Chidea about her book, Innovating Women, The Changing Face of Technology. And we are in the Santa Fe Baking Company with Catherine Ugaretz, and we are listening to this interview again. I'm enjoying actually listening to it again and hearing even more. It's funny sometimes you, even though I was the one who was doing, you know, talking with her, you hear it better when you're not actually, you know, the second time around. Anyway, the phones are ringing, but they're a little slow. So, ladies and gentlemen, 428-1393. If you like this show, if you like Farai Chidea, please support it. Please just simply support the show by calling 428-1393. It's the kind of thing where sometimes it's like, I don't know if it's like this. It's sort of like going to the gym. You don't want to go. You know you should go. And then you go. And it feels great. And it didn't take that much time and it didn't take that much effort. Even less effort than going to the gym is picking up the phone and calling 428-1393, making a donation to the Radio Cafe, making a donation to KSFR, and letting us know that you care about this show and this station.
Yes, and to add to that, Mary Charlotte, I also feel like it's part of living in a democratic country, making sure that we have things like public radio available. I think it's just really important to have the ability to listen to different voices for free, to be able to just have a radio or the radio in your car and have access to these sorts of things. I feel really fortunate to have that, to be able to hear these different voices, to have the access. And I'm grateful for you as well, because I was wondering the other day, where does she find the time to read all these books and keep up with all these different amazing people and thinkers and activists? So it's a wonderful way to say thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed reading this book by Farai Chidea because there's so many different voices in it. And I was thinking about it as I was reading it. I don't usually have people from like business and industry on the show as much as I have scientists and artists and theater artists and, you know, playwrights and musicians and composers and all kinds of people who are on, and activists and people in politics and all the kinds of different folks who are on and talking about the environment. But business is what makes the economy, which we always talk about, go around. And what's happening in business is incredibly important. And if it turns out that a non-sexist workplace is more economically viable than a sexist workplace, we need to know that.
Absolutely. And I think that there is some very interesting things happening both in local business and other businesses because the world is changing. And so asking any kind of business venture, asking themselves, what is going to work here? What is going to allow us to succeed at our mission? What is going to serve the people who invest in us? And what is going to serve our clients and make a difference in the world? I think some people are coming up with some very, very interesting ways to go about that. And keeping the conversation to the topic, I found the term social replication that she used very, very interesting, because I think it's something, you know, that whole idea of hiring people that you feel are like you.
Yeah.
And it's the sort of thing that a lot of us just don't necessarily notice. And the kind of self-awareness and the kind of corporate awareness or organizational awareness that needs to be there to focus on people that may bring skills you don't expect or come from different backgrounds is really, I think, essential. And it's interesting because we're all tempted for the easy and the comfortable because it's easy and comfortable.
Right.
But I think if we think about what our organizations are about or what we're about as individuals or businesses, we're not about easy and comfortable. We're about being great.
Yeah.
And providing great results. So bringing a different group of people in and a mixed group, I think, is really, really important.
428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. Again, the phones are ringing, but we're not even, I think we're like somewhere between a quarter of the way there to our goal of $1,000 for this hour. So we really need people to just step up and make that contribution to KSFR. We're looking especially for, first of all, women. If this affects you and you think that this information is useful to you, that's a really big deal, and we would like to hear from you. And we also would like to hear from first-time donors, people who have not donated before to KSFR, maybe people who are new in town and who listen to their public radio station in wherever they came from, but who are in New Mexico now and who have found KSFR. Give us a call, 428-1393. We're here with Catherine Ugaritz. We're going to go back to Farai Chidea, and we will be back close to the top of the hour. Help us meet that $1,000 goal for this hour by calling 428-1393. Now, to what extent do women help other women in business, in STEM fields, in Silicon Valley, and not?
Well, you know, I think that it's a mixed bag like everything else. Some women, and I've mentioned the women who are doing the angel funding for female companies, but then also there's people like Sophie Vanderbrook at Xerox. You know, she mentors a lot of younger women in technology. There are a ton of women who are really, really, really delivering value. But sometimes, and I've found this myself in journalism sometimes, women in technology who have more power and who may have, you know, quote, come up in an earlier era say, well, I put up with this, why can't you? And there's some resistance to changing what are abusive paradigms. We see this in medicine, too, where there's been a lot of debate over how much time residents should work. And some of the people who survived earlier medical residencies say, I stayed awake for 36 hours. Why shouldn't you? Well, patients end up dying sometimes if you've got residents who are half asleep. So there can be, as with many different changing fields, a resistance, like this idea that just because I put up with it, you have to too. And I think, again, it comes to returning to analyses about what is actually working, as opposed to thinking that just because you survived something harsh, it made you a better person. You may have survived it, but it may not necessarily have made you better. But I think, by and large, women are learning to advocate for other women. It's not necessarily what we are trained to do as a society, meaning that if you are used to living in a society like America, like many societies, where men hold the most power, even as a woman, you may subconsciously privilege male decision-making because you see that as the norm. It's not even necessarily about, you know, liking or valuing men more than women, but seeing male decision-making patterns as the norm. And so we're not immune to that as women.
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of depressing day when you realize, but it happens, that women can treat you with more discrimination than men, for example, in your own workplace.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, I think there's examples both ways, and I would like to think that we are winning the question of how we can be more kind to other women, but it's an evolution, just like it's an evolution for men. Gender equality is an evolutionary process, and it requires work.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of your own experiences with dealing with these issues. I mean, you're not in high tech exactly, but did you identify with many of the women who wrote pieces in the book?
Oh, of course. And I have worked in the technology industry twice in very small ways, working on the content side. So I worked briefly at Etsy on the content and content community and social media side of Etsy, which has a ton of programmers. It's a marketplace, of course, but it's a very programmer-driven company. And I also worked earlier for One Economy, which is a digital broadband-oriented nonprofit. And before that, well before that, in 1995, I started my own website. And so I have been involved in technology in many different ways at many different times. What I have found in my own career is pretty much what we've been talking about. Some of my best bosses have been women, and some of my worst bosses have been women. I don't want to paint it with any one brush, but again, it's about evolving our way towards a situation where we can have women leadership that really value gender equality and male leadership that values gender equality. So I'm not going to say that my best bosses were men or my, you know, best bosses were women. What I will say is that it's very much a mixed bag, and it's a choice. You know, the people who choose to act with respect towards people who they employ, regardless of race, regardless of class, regardless of skin color and ethnicity, it's a choice. And it's up to a company to reward the managers who make the best choices, not just to reward managers who hire through the old boys network. Diversity is increasingly important. Like, it's not even a question. If you look at a lot of the companies that are focusing on millennials, whether it's media companies like Fusion or whether it is entertainment companies, they get it. Their bottom line is that younger people are much more diverse in every way than older generations, and therefore they need to represent some face of the future. But technology is a very specialized arena, and journalism, of course, is a specialized arena. And in journalism, we've seen reverses in diversity, which really bothers me to no end.
Meaning we got to a certain point and are now moving backwards?
Over the past decade, particularly in print, but also in radio, we have seen less racial diversity, and we have not seen a lot of progress in gender diversity.
One of the pieces in the book, Innovating Women, that I really liked was written by an African-American woman from Alabama. And when she was young, she was continually overcoming racial discrimination. And for her, that meant studying harder and being the best. And she has these sort of beautiful examples of, you know, having her code be the only one that worked in her class. And then she was a high achiever. And then when she got to Silicon Valley, she encountered overt and rampant sexism, which for her hurt even more. What's the dynamic there?
Well, you know, Silicon Valley, I mean, there's so many different directions I could take this, but part of it is that Silicon Valley is a place where people have traditionally been lauded regardless of their people skills. So, for example, Steve Jobs, who was unquestionably an amazing innovator, was not necessarily great with people. And there has been kind of a pass given. And there's also this idea of the tech bro culture, which is something we're seeing in the current debate over video gaming. We are seeing right now women who are speaking out against sexism in the video game industry literally receiving death threats. So there's this idea.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I mean, there's a woman whose name I'll recall in a second, who has been speaking out against, and she herself is in the video gaming industry, and she's been speaking out against the way that some of the video games are misogynistic. And so, for example, it's called Gamergate, if anyone is interested in looking more at this. But there is a game developer named Brianna Wu and her husband Frank, and they had to literally leave their home after receiving rape and death threats with their home address posted. And so they basically have been speaking out against some of the issues about harassing female developers. And there's something called doxing, which means using technology to get people's home addresses, financial information, et cetera. And what happens sometimes when these gender issues escalate is that hackers will dox a person who is speaking out and post their home address on the internet and say, do what you want. And in some cases, what that means is rape and death threats and people having to run for their lives. I mean, this is really crazy.
I mean, in defense of what? Like, sexism is so important to us that we're going to kill people?
I guess so. I mean, I can't say why people do this. I can only say that it's a much longer conversation, that there are forums like 4chan, which is an online forum, where basically any kind of threat to the autonomy of certain people in the tech community or the hacker community is taken as a call to action. So I can't get inside the mind of the people who are doing this, but there was also another incident against a woman named Anita Sarkeesian. She was going to Utah State University to speak about so-called Gamergate, and then she had to cancel the appearance because she got death threats, and because Utah is a concealed weapons state, they could not legally search the people going in to the venue to see if they had weapons, and so she canceled. This is real. This is all going on right now.
It's interesting because what we're talking about is such a reflection of all the other issues in our society that have to do with violence, that have to do with long histories of every different kind of discrimination, which has to do with our militarism, and all of these things get bound up together in what should be a kind of like safe place to be, which is women programmers, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would hate to see women's reaction to some of these things be, let's just create our own spaces. We need gender integration as well as, you know, I mean, they're male-only firms, so I'm not against there being women-only firms, but I'm very much focused, and I think Innovating Women is very much focused on integrating women fully into the tech and STEM economies.
So part of what's needed to facilitate that integration is, I mean, changes in education and so on. And part of it is a kind of bigger set of cultural changes. Like, what kind of changes would you envision?
Well, I think a large number of the questions have to do with the choices women are allowed to make. So do we, not on a corporate level, but on a federal level, have maternity leave policies? No, we don't. Afghanistan has a maternity leave policy. I'm not saying they're enforcing it, but they have one on a national level. America does not. It's shocking. You know, virtually every European country and many developing countries have maternity leave, federally mandated maternity leave policies. So first of all, you're now seeing this new development with companies, tech companies offering egg freezing to female coders. So that says, okay, we know that we're working you so hard that you can't really have children the typical biological way because we need you to work really, really hard through your fertility years, but we'll offer you egg freezing. One of the people I interviewed for my podcast, One with Farai, is someone who wrote a book called The Big Lie, which talks about how egg freezing technology, for example, is not nearly as secure as people think. So let's say that you're even 25 years old and you freeze your eggs. There's no guarantee that those eggs will survive the egg freezing process. And for tech companies to, instead of focusing on, we will reintegrate you into the workforce once you have had a child, say, just freeze your eggs, is a really interesting interpretation of the evolution of gender equality. I'm not sure that it's taking us in the right place. So what I think we need are federal level policies, companies that really recognize that, you know, what, and I'm not saying all women want a parent, but that those women who do want a parent should have the opportunity to do so, but also that men and women may work differently, but not less efficiently. So if you have some men who want to spend 30-hour coding marathons and then take a couple days out of the office, and some women who would rather come in, you know, not necessarily 9 to 5, but 9 to 7 every single day, that Kimberly Bryant, again, of Black Girls Code, talks about how she consistently exceeded her company's goals for her work as an engineer back when she was working in the private sector. And people didn't believe she could do it. But she did not win by doing things like other people. She won by motivating her team and working in a structured way. So you've got to recognize that not everyone's going to work the same way. And then it really does take this focus on corporate responsibility, individual responsibility, and even federal responsibility.
Farai Chidea is co-author with Vivek Wadhwa of the book Innovating Women, The Changing Face of Technology. She's a journalist. She's host of the podcast One with Farai, and I'll link to that on my podcast, SantaFeRadioCafe.org. Farai, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. This has been great.
428-1393 is the number, and I'm here with Catherine Ugaretz, and we are just barely over a quarter of the way to our goal. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a $1,000 goal for this hour, and we're still in the, 200s or low 300s, something like that. So let us have a flurry of calls during the rest of this hour. 428-1393. It's as simple as this. If you like what you've heard, support it.
Well, and here's the thing. Maybe even if you don't like what you've heard, you can still support it, because I think one of the things I was thinking about while listening to the interview is how so often we have a breakdown of conversation in this country and a lack of willingness to listen to what we disagree with. And by listening, really listen with a kind of genuine civility rather than let me listen and then let me reply. I'll be thinking about what I'm going to say to debate you instead of listening. Because what we're seeing is incredible breakdown that she was referring to in the gaming community.
Yeah.
And by the way, one of those
gamers is on Democracy Now! Today, apparently.
Oh, great.
One of those women gamers.
Oh, well, that sounds like a great reason to tune in later today.
Yep.
So, and I just want to say thank you to all of you who made time to call and to donate. That's wonderful. Maybe you have been listening to this in the car while you're driving, so maybe when you get to work, if you have a minute, you can call or go online. It's a great way to participate and to show your passion for conversation.
428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. And let's get the phones ringing just for the last couple of minutes. We are out in 3 minutes, but we will take till the end of the news to try to reach our goal, 428-1393. And yes, you can donate online, ksfr.org. That's why they call it high technology. we make it easy for you to donate in so many ways. It is non-commercial radio. That means we have very few of what you might even call commercials. They're not even called commercials in public radio. They're called underwriting. And we have very few of those minutes per hour. Most of our hours are pure 100% program. And that program we listen to what the community says. We listen to what the community wants. I love getting feedback from listeners. You can always write to radiocafe@ksfr.org and let us know what you think. It takes a lot to produce this show. It's a huge amount of effort.
So, Mary Charlotte, what... I don't know the origin of this show. What was the moment when you first began this show?
Somebody was doing it before. The fabulous Honey Harris, who is at Hutton Broadcasting right now, KBAC, and she was doing it for a couple of years, and a guy named Will Sims before her who started it, and he's a longtime radio broadcaster, and he did it for a year, passed it on to Honey. Honey did it for 2 years. And then she left town for a while, and I stepped in and have been doing it for 11 years.
Wow. Well, this is one of the reasons I do love living in Santa Fe, because we have this kind of programming and these kinds of opportunities and so many wonderful people to hear what they're up to.
We've got 1 minute left, 428-1393. Let's get as close as we can to our $1,000 goal for this hour. You're listening to KSFR White Rock Santa Fe Public Radio, and this is the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. The number is 428-1393. Catherine Ugaretz is an educator, has worked with girls doing specifically high tech and programming and kind of science fields, and you work with all kinds of other people as well.